Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Talk Spicy. I'm Coach Gene Clemens. Thank you for joining me wherever you are joining me. Rate the show, comment, agree, disagree, but whatever you do, keep it spicy. Five-star ratings are appreciated. And if you're joining me on the YouTube channel, make sure you like, make sure you subscribe. I just got one thing to say. That guy, he's different. That guy, don't make me say his name, because you college coaches out there are frightened to death. You people out there that was throwing dirt on his name, you're frightened to death. He's different. But y'all thought this was a game? Y'all thought this was some BS? Y'all thought he was out here playing around? This ain't no game. This ain't somebody out here just here for giggles. Y'all thought he was just chasing the money? You dudes, you people are out here legitimately walking around with the understanding that this man, who has been a winner at everything he has ever done in his life, was just going to go to a place where all of you said he could not win, where all of you said he was going to have a hard time recruiting, and just take this money, be bad, and walk off into the sunset. Here's one of the biggest things that I always laughed at with the Coach Prime narrative, that all he cared about was money. He's already got money. He's already got money. This man didn't just start walking around with Louis bags. He been with the Louis. He was with the Louis before Louis became popular to be with the Louis. This man has been different. He's been elite. A lot of the stuff, see, you got to understand how to take some of the Coach Prime isms, right? You gotta take some of the prime time isms with a grain of salt. I heard him talking and talking defense on the Manning cast. I watched the Manning cast for the first time the other day. It was all right. Don't know what all of the fuss and the hubbub was about, but it was okay. It was better than watching like the regular telecast. I had to listen to Joe Buck, but you know, but they were asking him, I think Peyton asked him about playing cornerback and whether or not, like, he was like, nah, man, you know, my playbook was like, he said my playbook was 16 pages. It was just the picture of the wide receiver I had to cover that week. Like, and he says that because that's like fly stuff to say. But if you don't know any better, you would think that he wasn't like there. Like, he wasn't that man mentally. But then when you talk to other players who play with them, they tell you how meticulous he was about his game, how he knew how wide receivers like to break. He knew their route combinations. He knew how many steps they like to take on their routes. He understood it. It was a Mensa level understanding of how to play the cornerback position. So it wasn't surprising to me when he flipped the number one recruit in America last recruiting cycle, who was a defensive back, who was projected to be an NFL caliber defensive back. I'm not surprised that he flipped that guy. Everybody said, oh, well, you know, they paid him. They paid him. That was the first thing they said. They paid him. Second thing they said, oh, well, he did it because it's novelty. He could be the first at Jackson State. None of them said, well, you know, he plays cornerback. Well, I shouldn't say nobody said it. Nobody nationally, nobody with a big voice said, well, he... Why would you not want to be underneath the tutelage of the greatest ever? Because clearly he has an ability to pass down the information to the next level. He has an ability to pass the information down to the next level that many people do not have who played the game. There are coaches at the high school level. There are coaches at the high school level who do not have the ability to take what they did as players and transition it into teaching it to others. There are some that just don't have that ability. It's an innate ability. There are also some people who just don't have the ability to talk to you and make you want to come play for them. If all you see is the quick clips, if all you see is the stuff that the national media would want you to see because they want to try to paint a certain narrative about him, then it is easy for you to come to the assumption that Coach Prime can't possibly have the level of success at Colorado that he had at Jackson State. It's a different level. It's Pac-12. It's blah, 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 blah. Bam. He takes the number one recruit from Miami, flips him to Colorado. Ladies and gentlemen, in the Pac-12, you're going to have to deal with two of the best cornerback prospects in the world for at least the next 2 years, right? Because Travis Hunter's a freshman. He can't leave until he's a junior. Y'all thought it was a game? They've got one of the top transfer portal recruiting classes in the nation. They just landed the top recruit, which means that wherever they were overall is about to jump by several points. And y'all think this is like some coincidence? Y'all really think he's out here playing? He is different. He's changing the math. And I'm going to tell you why he's changing the math. It's been something that we've been saying for the longest time. The moment you got a charismatic black man in a position to lead other charismatic black men, he was going to be like the Pied Piper, and they were just going to start following. It is no disrespect to any other coach out there, but when you got these old pasty white guys or these rah-rah, sis-boom-bah white dudes leading all of these black men, that is not something that these other young black men look at and go, that's what I want to be a part of. When you see the khakis and the khakis in a traditional polo on the sidelines of these FBS games, that's not making these people want to rock. When you see Prime out there on the sideline with the bomber jacket on and the chains and the medallion, when you hear him with his theme music in the locker room, when you see how they give it up, when you see the magnetic personalities that want to be around him, when you see all of that, but then you know that they're out there putting that work in, that he has respect, he has a new school feel, an old school mentality, he relates. Because when these players, these high-end, flashy, I want to be seen, because I know that in order to make the money and get to the level that I want to get to, I need to be seen. Look at him and go, that's the example. That's the I Ching. That's the gold standard. That's who they want to be. He's different. Nobody else in the college football landscape can bring to the table what Deion Sanders brings to the table. And because they can't bring to the table what Coach Prime brings to the table, thank you. Because they can't bring to the table what Coach Prime brings to the table, they're always going to be at a disadvantage. Yes, they're going to have, some of them are going to have better facilities, but y'all have seen these Colorado facilities. They are fly. They are phenomenal. Yeah, they might have some, like, they may have a better overall record, but what does record matter? When Nick Saban took over Alabama, Alabama wasn't Alabama. It had historical relevance, right? You know what other program has historical relevance? Colorado. When Nick Saban took over at Alabama, the SEC was good, but they were not dominating the college football landscape. That sounds like the Pac-12 to me. Good, but not dominating the college football landscape. When Nick Saban took over at Alabama, people said, oh, it's a new time. It's going to be hard to recruit at Alabama. It's a new age. It's a new way. It's going to be hard to recruit at Alabama. I don't know if Coach Saban is going to be able to do at Alabama what he was able to do at LSU. Year one, get it right. Year two, competing for national championships, off and racing for the next. So I look at Colorado and I say to you out there, who in the Pac-12, which team in the Pac-12 is an unbeatable team? Which team in the Pac-12 strikes fear in the heart of any team? If there's any big five conference where you could go from worst to first, it's the Pac-12. If Coach Prime comes out and goes 500 next year, it's a win. Compared to what they were this year, it's a win. But 500 is not going to be good enough for him. And undoubtedly, after all of this, after everything he's doing, people are still going to doubt him. They're still going to say, oh, well, he's going to lose a game. He's going to lose a game badly. Oh, well, you know, all the glitz and glamour matters until they blow the whistles. Because for guys like Coach Prime, who is blazing a trail that's never been blazed before, who is doing things that's never been done before by a black head coach, right? By a black head coach, because he's venturing to go head to head with the greats, because he's speaking it into existence, he's going to get like pushback. He's going to get people who want to say, no. He can't do that. He can't be that. Because that's easy for them to do. But never forget, when he went to Colorado, people said, worst job in America. It's one thing to get them to come to the South. How is he going to get them to come to the mountains? Ladies and gentlemen, he just got a recruit to flip from South Beach. He just got a recruit to flip from the University of Miami, South Beach, and come to Colorado. This thing is over. If this is the level he can play at from Colorado, don't let him mess around. Don't let him mess around and have an 8-9 win season next year. It might be one and done for Coach Prime at Colorado. Because there might be an elite level Power 5 college and university out there that comes calling. And if you put him in charge of one of those elite level blue blood colleges, universities, that's a wrap for y'all. That is an absolute wrap for y'all. It might be a wrap now. Y'all thought he was playing. He told you I'm here. He told you he was coming. He told you he was bringing his own bags. He told you they were Louis bags. It's a lot of bags. You're going to have to deal with it. You know what else you're going to have to deal with? You're going to have to deal with stigmas, right? I get upset when I think about Coach Byron Leftwich being fired at from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And the reason that I get upset about it is because of the way in which it is told, the way in which it's given to the people. See, the Buccaneers, they tried to go about it in a mature fashion. They said that they parted ways with Byron Leftwich. But the Tampa Bay media that did not like Byron Leftwich, that never gave him credit for anything from the start, that always tried to find a way to blame him for the shortcomings of the team, that never gave him any credit for anything that happened on the field, but gave him all the blame, those media members, all of them. And if you're not that person, then show the receipts. I'm not going to bust you out. I'm not going to call your names out. You guys know who you are. Look at the way in which every single one of them reported this. Leftwich fired. Leftwich fired. Leftwich fired. One of them, who runs a very popular site, who I actually think is a really good dude, every single thing out of his mouth is negative about Byron Leftwich. Every single thing out of his mouth. So, let me let y'all in on a little secret. Byron Leftwich is the same offensive coordinator that was there when Bruce Arians took over the job. With Jameis Winston. Yes, that's the 30 interception Jameis Winston. And in that Jameis Winston 30 interception year, they had a top five offense in the league. With him throwing 30 interceptions, they still had a top five offense in the league. Top five scoring offense. The next 2 years under Tom Brady, they had a top five scoring offense. But if you remember that first year, didn't start off well. See, a lot of people like to believe that it was all just because they added Tom Brady. So here's what I'm going to tell you what I think about the Byron Leftwich firing. The Byron Leftwich firing is going to end up feeling very much like them not re-signing Jameis Winston. And I'll explain what I mean. So when Jameis Winston threw for 30-something odd touchdowns, ran for another five, I believe. So he almost accounted for over 40 touchdowns, but he threw 30 interceptions. That season, and they had one of the top five offenses in the league, right? Even with all those interceptions, top five offense in the league. When they got rid of Jameis Winston and they brought in Tom Brady, what they sold to the world was the only change that they made was Tom Brady. But that wasn't the only change they made. They drafted a right tackle. They hadn't drafted a first-round pick offensive lineman in God knows how long. They drafted a right tackle who ended up being an all-pro. They brought in a center who was an all-pro caliber center. They brought in Antonio Bryant. They brought in a Hall of Famer in Rob Gronkowski. So you've added two key offensive linemen and two key receiving weapons to go with an offense that was already a top five offense in the NFL. Imagine if they had not brought in Tom Brady and they just brought in the center. They just brought in the tight end. They just brought in the wide receiver. They just drafted the right tackle. And they still had Jameis Winston. The one thing that we know about Jameis Winston is Jameis Winston gets the ball to whoever's open. Right? Imagine if the Buccaneers had made Jameis Winston get some LASIK surgery done. So, Jameis leaves. You add a new quarterback, but then you add all these other things. Lo and behold, the top five offense stays the top five offense, but now you're throwing the better weapons, you're better protected, you're not as rushed, you can get the ball off. But remember, at the beginning of the year, that wasn't that great because he wasn't as good at running that same stuff that Winston was running. So they adjusted the offense. Who did that adjusting? You're right, Byron Leftwich was. They didn't give him credit for it. They said that was all on Bruce Arians. Bruce Arians says, nope, that's Byron Leftwich. They have a top five offense. Brady's first year, they win the Super Bowl. Brady gets all the credit. Byron Leftwich gets no credit. Byron Leftwich gets no credit. Next year comes, they have another good year. Byron Leftwich is up for coaching positions. He doesn't take the position. He stays the course. Likes the Bucs, wants to stay with the Bucs. They come back this year with a quarterback who is going through it because he's divorcing his wife. He's 1 foot in, 1 foot out of the NFL because he just wanted to retire. Now he's unretiring. He's going through a divorce with his wife publicly. You can tell he's messed up about it. You can see it in his face. He doesn't even look right. He's got to miss time. They're all pro guard retired. Other guard, free agency, he's gone. Center gets hurt early in the season. Left tackle hurt. Backup left tackle hurt. They're down to the third string tackle. They're without their starting center. They're breaking in two new guards. The only holdover they really have that's out there every day is the right tackle. That's the only guy out there. Tom Brady looks afraid to take a hit. Literally all year, anytime somebody got near him, he froze up. He's not as accurate. He's not as dialed in. You've got wide receivers coming back off major injuries. There is no Gronk anymore. There is no Antonio Brown anymore. You didn't replace them with like same caliber, same level guys. You replaced them with an old Julio Jones who can't stay healthy, and with Cade Otton, who's still trying to figure out how to be an NFLer. You got rookie guys who played FCS football at tackle, now trying to learn how to play guard. You've got all of these changes. You got a defense that's not bad, but does do boneheaded things. Not the greatest coverage team in the world, so when you play passing teams, you're going to end up in a firefight. No blame goes to the quarterback, except no blame goes to the quarterback, and there's no mention of all the changes that have happened to this offensive line and to the receiving core until it's time to mention why the quarterback's not playing well. So they use that information to explain why the quarterback's not having a good season. But they don't use that information to explain why the offense is not good. So you have a top five offense for three straight years that goes to one of the bottom offenses in the league. You can see why, but the only person you can blame is the offensive coordinator. Ladies and gentlemen, Byron Leftwich had to die so that the legend of Tom Brady and the legend of Jason Light could live. Because the truth is that Tom Brady was trash this year. And Jason Light didn't do his job. There were roles that should have been replenished. And they tried to double down on just trying to keep the cast together instead of getting some new blood, some young blood, some talent in there to fill the gaps where needed. They didn't. They didn't do it. They wanted to run it back with playoff Lenny. They wanted to run it back with some of these other ancillary pieces that they probably should have let go. They were hoping that they were right on a third round or a fourth rounder or here and there. No. He got lazy in his job, and it cost him this year, and it cost Byron Leftwich his job. And because the offense isn't sexy, because they don't motion people all over the place, and make it look sexy and run a bunch of crossing routes all the time, because they don't do that, the offense isn't innovative. Hey, here's a news flash for all of you people who act like y'all really know football and who I start to sometimes question if you actually know football when you say the things that you say. None of that stuff is sexy. They're not doing anything like revolutionary. They're not doing anything revolutionary. San Francisco doesn't have the same level of success with their passing game versus every team. If they did, then their quarterbacks wouldn't have stat lines like 13 for 24, 187 yards. Some people just know how to call plays better, but these schemes are not like, they're not all world. They're not changing the world. But here's what's going to happen. They're going to bring in a new offensive coordinator next year, right? But then they're also going to improve the offensive line. The rookie tight end is going to be another year in the league, so he should be better. The improvements on the offensive line is going to make Tom Brady more comfortable, because I'm pretty sure that part of him wanting to come back was Byron Leftwich not being there anymore, right? Because you got to blame somebody. So that stuff's going to happen. People are going to be motivated. The wide receiver who's dealing with a knee injury this year coming back is now going to be a full season removed from a knee injury. And they're going to have more success in an NFC South that's not that great. Ta-da! So then it's going to perpetuate the idea that, oh, Byron Leftwich just wasn't good. And Byron Leftwich isn't going to get another gig where he's the offensive coordinator somewhere else, like some of these other people who were actually bad at their jobs, who were let go. He might end up as the quarterback's coach somewhere, or he might not coach at all. Because I'm pretty sure Byron Leftwich is someone who's took care of his money, so he might not even have to coach. But then people will say, oh, well, look, if he was good, he would have gotten another job somewhere else. How? You burnt his name down. You burnt down his entire reputation on the way out the door. All I hear day after day is how bad Byron Leftwich is. Oh my God, the coordination of this offense is just awful. They even said it on national TV. Dan Orlovsky, who came on national TV and gave the biggest piece of bail to Mike McDaniel for bad clock management because calling plays is hard, flipped around and said, oh no, Byron Leftwich is just not good at it. Man, get out of here. There is nothing worse than when people who are awful at their job then try to tell people that they're awful at their job. Dan Orlovsky is one of the most overrated people on television. Overrated. And he doesn't have to account for any of the dumb stuff he says. Any of the times that he's wrong, they don't throw it back in his face. That's the problem with the talking heads that are on television. Anytime they're wrong, nobody busts them out on it. They're not held accountable. Their job's not on the line when they're wrong. They just move on to the next take. It's awful what they did. It's awful what they did. And I'm a Buccaneers fan, and it makes me sick. They scapegoated him. Don't let anybody else tell you anything. He was 100% a scapegoat. And when they try to give you, oh, well, you know, if the offense was so conservative, then why did they pass the ball so much? That just lets you know how much they understand about football. Because just because you pass the ball doesn't mean you're not conservative. Especially when you consider the type of passes that you're throwing. Checkdowns and screen passes are extremely conservative. And if you look at the completions, for the Buccaneers, it speaks to that level of conservativeness. I don't even know if I said that, if that's a word, conservativeness. But it speaks to how conservative they were this year. Like, it's not really, and the funny part is, it's not really difficult to figure out. I'm going to show you. Watch for it. Chris Godwin had 104 receptions. Chris Godwin is the guy that they like to run on the receiver screens all the time. That's his jam. That's what he does. Who was the number three receiver on the Bucs this year? Was it Russell Gage? Nope. Was it Cade Otton? Nope. Was it Julio Jones? Nope. You know who it was? Leonard Fournette. Leonard Fournette, who is not a receiving running back, caught 73 passes. If Leonard Fournette caught 73 passes, that just tells me it was a conservative offense. Guess who else was in the top five in receptions this year? You guessed it. The backup running back, Rashad White. He had 50 catches. So 123 receptions out of the 499 total receptions, 123 of them were to running backs. They were, you're telling me that's not conservative? Mike Evans is their big play. He's their big play wide receiver. He's their stretch the field wide receiver. He's their over the top wide receiver. He had 77 catches. So the intermediate to short route guy, Chris Godwin, has 104 receptions. Another 123 went to running backs. And you're telling me this is not a conservative offense? Tell me you don't understand football without telling me that you don't understand football. Saying that the reason it wasn't a conservative offense was because they passed the ball all the time. Sometimes you just got to understand Byron Leftwich had to die so that the legend of Tom Brady and Jason Light could live. I want to get out of here because I've been out here talking to you forever, but I want to get out of here with this one. I want to say congratulations to head coach John Stegelmeyer, the now former head coach of South Dakota State, the recent FCS champions. No more classier guy in the game of football. All the cliches. Did it the right way. But I knew this was coming. I could see it. I had a feeling that this was the end for him. Especially after the win, when I saw him come up to the podium with his grandkids, to me that said, oh, I'm never coming back here again. This is it for me. So I want to salute him as a coach for being in the trenches for that long. You're a man amongst men. Good luck and enjoy the retirement. I have a feeling that he'll still be involved with helping young men in some kind of way, because that's just a passion. That's how he stays young, and that's his battery. So whatever's next for Coach Stagg, I want to know that from a guy who met him and had a really personal conversation with him. Proud to know that there are gentlemen like that still in this business. And I hope that one day, when it's all said and done, that people revere me the way that they revere John Stegelmeyer. Job well done, and congratulations. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Talk Spicy. I'm Coach Gene Clemens. Do this thing a few times a week. Rate the show, comment, agree, disagree, whatever you do, keep it spicy. 5-star ratings are appreciated. And if you're joining me on the YouTube channel, you know what to do. Like, subscribe. Until next time, peace.